ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 4, Chapter entitled Hiranyakashipu Terrorizes the Universe, Text 1 and 2. Text 1 has no purport, so we'll chant Text 2 together. I'll just read the Text 1 first. Shri Narada Uvacha, Evam Ritashata एवं मृतशतधृतिर् हिरण्यकशिपुरथ प्रादातत्तपसा प्रीतो वरांस्तस्य सुदुर्लभान्। ट्रांसलेशन। नारद मुनि कंटिन्यूड, लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा वाज वेरी मच सैटिस्फाइड बाय हिरण्यकशिपुस ऑस्टेरिटीज विच वर डिफिकल्ट टू परफॉर्म, देयरफॉर व्हेन सॉलिसिटेड फॉर बेनेडिक्शंस ही इंडीड ग्रांटेड देम ऑल्दो दे वर रेयरली टू बी अचीव्ड। टेक्स्ट 2। श्री ब्रह्मोवाच ताते मे दुर्लभा पुंसाम् यान् वृणीषे वरान् मम तथापि वितराम्यङ्ग वरान् यद्यपि दुर्लभान्। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. Lord Brahma said, O Hiranyakashipu, these benedictions for which you have asked are difficult to obtain for most men. Nonetheless, O my son, I shall grant you them, although they are generally not available. Purport. Material benedictions are not always exactly worthy of being called benedictions. If one possesses more and more, a benediction itself may become a curse. For just as achieving material opulence in this material world requires great strength and endeavor, maintaining it also requires great endeavor. Lord Brahma informed Hiranyakashipu that although he was ready to offer him whatever he had asked, the result of the benedictions would be very difficult for Hiranyakashipu to maintain. Nonetheless, since Brahma had promised, he wanted to grant all the benedictions asked. The word Durlabhan indicates that one should not take benedictions one cannot enjoy peacefully. Generally, those who are sent by God in this material world for a specific task are called prophets, messengers of God, sons of God, or in common parlance in India, Bharatvarsh, they are known as acharyas. We have Shripad Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Nimbarkacharya. An acharya is one who teaches by his example, but especially he teaches, at least at that time, the lost science or art of devotional service. Just like the function of an avatar is to deliver, the word avatar has a different connotation from the English word, which is its equivalent, called incarnation. Carne is flesh. So incarnation means when something which is supernatural, or generally the idea that God is unembodied, doesn't have a gross body. And that leads to the erroneous conclusion that God doesn't have any body. But that's not true. Srila Prabhupada again and again emphasizes that nirakar means no material akar. So the Western idea of an incarnation is when something which is unembodied becomes flesh. Incarnate, to accept flesh. And we have this debate whether Krishna's body is material or not, whether the body of Acharya is material or not. And Prabhupada's usual answer would be that if a copper wire is having electricity pass through it, then if you touch it, you don't get the experience of touching a copper wire. You get the experience of an electric shock. Because it's not any ordinary copper wire. Or an iron bar, if it is kept in a furnace, after some time it becomes red hot. Then it ceases to become just a cold iron bar. It has all the properties of fire. Similarly, those who have shown by their life's example as to how much dedicated they are, their bodies are not considered material. Although, for various purposes, they might seem to have a material body or a material looking body. Lord Krishna makes the difference by saying, Manushim Tanum. It looks like the body of others. The Bhagavatam it says, Gudh Kapata Manusha. Kritavan Kila Karmani. Saha Ramena Keshava. Ati Martyani Bhagavan. Gudh Kapata Manusha. Gudh, mysterious. And Kapata Manusha. Deceptively looking similar to a human being's body. I was just thinking about today's chapter where we have one person, Hiranyakashipu, deciding to challenge the laws of the universe, and of course to do any change, you need power. Power comes from austerities. In today's world, in one sense it is true that those who have become big, either big merchants, big businessmen, big scholars, there has to be some background of austerity behind them. Football is a big business. I would call it not a game, but it is big business. And we have this typical phenomenon in the West and also in Latin America, where it's very popular, in Africa too, where young people between the age of say 18 and 27 or 28, that's a prime time when they can be good players. And at the same time, that's the time when they can enjoy their senses to the maximum. So although they are earning millions, they also know that I can't afford to enjoy my body the way I want, because otherwise the trade-off, as they say, is between enjoying your body or earning more money. And because of the destructive habits which are inculcated in that time, invariably at the age of 40, 45, their bodies become so grotesquely out of shape, they have so many different kinds of diseases, that almost all the money which they have earned is just squandered in their health costs, or it just vanishes. So, even though it is Kali Yuga, it is still true that there has to be some modicum of austerity before you achieve something. A student may have to forego his party or some celebration because the exams are coming. So although you want to, If somebody just gives in to his desires, feeling that, okay, I just enjoyed, then you won't have the gain for which you are striving so hard. So the principle is true that without austerities there can be no gain. And here we have Hiranyakashipu performing such great austerities. As we always point out, just sitting in a class for half an hour is so tiring for the legs that we have to change. We have to change our posture. And here Hiranyakashipu is standing on the toes of his feet for thousands of years. Just try doing it for 5 minutes. I don't think for 5 minutes it's possible. And what is the ultimate aim of these austerities? The previous chapter was entitled, His Plan to Become Immortal. Isn't that? Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. Now here are the Vedas, especially in the hands of a very powerful Acharya, like Madhvacharya, whose disappearance tithi is being observed today. The Acharyas come and say that every living entity is already immortal. There is a Vedic hymn which says, Srunvantu Vishve Amritasya Putra. Oh, all you immortal sons of nectar, Amritasya Putra. Amrit can either mean the nectar. There is this idea that the demigods, they drink nectar every day to become immortal. Now, little common sense would make you think, why every day? Like today's products which are available, that this kind of pen works for on and ever and ever and ever. Just keep on filling new cartridges. You may say, hey, that means once I buy this, I have to keep spending money for the cartridges. Is it so possible that you just buy once, one cartridge, and that goes on forever? Well, that will be the end of my business. So similarly, the demigods, they are called Amara. Amara, no death. But to have that no death phenomenon, they have to keep on charging their bodies with nectar. And that nectar is available in those particular planets. It's freely available there. But to go there, it's very costly. And then we have the demigods sometimes being defeated by demons. They have their own problems, own fights. They're always threatened by someone taking over their position. So they're not exactly amar in the sense we talk about them. We see them and feel that, oh, it must be such a nice life. Millions of years. No death, no old age, no disease. There is death, for sure. A brahma bhuvana loka punaravartino arjuna. Once someone goes up, he has to come down. If it is only in the material world. A brahma, up to brahma loka. The Gita plainly says that. Kshine punye martya lokam vishanti. Just like a rocket which has gone and is devoid of fuel, the earth's gravitational force will bring it down. Similarly, someone with low punya, he has to be forced down. But then the Vedas are talking of that everybody being already an immortal. How do we understand we are immortal? Or there is another famous, very popular saying in India, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya. Don't stay in darkness. Go to Jyoti. Asatoma Sadgamaya. Don't stay in a place which is Asat. Asat means bad, degraded or temporary. Go to a place which is Sat. And Mritoma Amrita Gamaya. Don't stay in a place where death stares at you squarely in the face. go to a place where there is no death. But where is that Amrita? Is there a place where immortality exists? I was reading the other day that two phenomena which are very popular with occult or those who are interested in the supernatural. One is a stone, which if you rub to anything will make it into gold, called the Parasmani or the Philosopher's Stone. And secondly is some kind of cup of everlasting youth. You drink from it, and no more death, no more old age. Now the funny thing is, if someone says that this is that, two in one, you touch anything to this, and that thing will become gold. And if you drink from this, you will regain immortality. We feel, well, this is just a book. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is not a book. Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two Bhagavatas. The book Bhagavat, Grantha Bhagavat, and the Vyakti Bhagavat, the devotee Bhagavat. By their lifestyle, they give. In fact, once one devotee was saying that the stone, the Parasmani, the Philosopher's Stone, if it touches something, it makes it into gold. A Vaishnav, he also touches someone and makes his life, he changes his life. But he is more powerful than that stone. A Vaishnav, when he touches someone, he makes the other person like himself. He just doesn't make someone good. He makes someone like himself. And he prays to Krishna that let him be better than myself. Srila Prabhupada used to say that I wish that my disciples, they defeat me. They do more preaching than me. He says, which father will be unhappy if his son excels him? So briefly, Shripad Madhvacharya's life story is delineated in the book Shripad Madhva Vijay by one of his disciples. There are two accounts of the year in which he appeared. Some say it was 1210 and some say it is 1238 according to the modern calendar. And he stayed on this planet Earth for 79 years. He disappeared in 1317. There is a place called Pajaka Kshetra or Tulu Nada, 8 miles southeast of Udupi, in a illustrious family of very pure Brahmanas, Madhyageha Bhatta and his good wife, Srimati Vedavati Devi. They were his parents. And right from the beginning, they could see that there is something different about this boy. Supernatural things would happen. His mother would hear that their young son was also called Vasudev, later called Ananda Tirtha, Purna Pragya, and Madhvacharya. He was playing far away somewhere. And his mother would get worried and she would ask someone that, where is he playing? He said, oh, he's playing in that particular area. And she would call out. And within no time, with just a jump, he would jump from that particular place right in the courtyard. And he would be amazed. Just now he was there and now suddenly he's here. As the family was poor, they had taken some money from a local landlord. And one day, young Madhvacharya, he saw that there is someone sitting just outside the courtyard. He won't come in. And his father and mother are like very gloomy, sad. So he asked him, what's the problem? He said, we owe him this person some money. He said, so? So no, we don't have that money to pay back. And now he has come to our house, he has not entered the threshold, and he's going to sit there, and he says, I'm not going to take any water or anything from you. So see the cultural environment at that time. If someone does that, then it's like a big shame on the family for which he is doing that. If he doesn't come in and doesn't accept even water from you, it's like a big insult. And then you can't cook anything for yourself either, because a guest is being insulted. Quite a novel way of requesting your money. So he heard his father that, I am going to pay you. Do I ever deny that we owe you money? No, I am going to pay you. But just see the situation. I just can't pay all that you want right now. And that man was saying, nothing doing. Everything or nil. I am going to take everything right now. But he said, I don't have anything to show you even. And young Madhvacharya, he took some time to understand what it is, the whole situation. And he says, what exactly do we need? He said, we have to pay him something. He said, okay. He went outside and his mother saw that he was collecting something. Maybe she thought he is collecting tamarind seeds. And she thought, how am I going to pay this person tamarind seeds? He wants gold coins. And when Madhvacharya opened his palm, they were full of gold coins. And naturally, the first instinct in the mind of a parent is, did you steal? Or did you rob from someone? Where did you get these? He said, just now pay him, we'll discuss the whole thing later. So they went and they showed him. And this man was overjoyed. He says, so much? I don't need so much. Just take whatever you need. So he took, he was happy. And the parents were confused. What should we say about this small boy doing this kind of thing? There was a big snake. Actually it was a demon called Maniman. And this Maniman was living in near that area. And one day, young Madhvacharya, he just caught hold of him, whirled him around, dashed him to his death. It is said that he is Vayu, very powerful. And that's how he would show that in these pastimes. Hiranyakashipu, or people like him, they perform austerities so that they can enjoy. Just the opposite is seen in the lives of these acharyas. They perform austerities or they give up something in this world just to show us that if we want something which is sublime, then this kind of austerity is needed. Austerity is needed anyway. If you want to enjoy this world, still austerity is needed. But then, why perform austerity so that at the end you complicate things much more, maybe things become more worse? If at all austerity is to be performed, then it has to be for liberation. So since Madhvacharya was no ordinary boy, at age 12, he sought permission from his parents, I want to take sannyas. And they were saying, what? You're just 12 years old. So every day they would discuss this and his father would say, no, please no. As such you were born so late and we are so attached, I can't give you permission for sannyas. Finally, it came to this conclusion that he asked his parents, all you want is a son, right? I'll bless you that you'll get one more child. And his father was saying, but it's impossible. We both are very old. But he said, no, it will happen. And one day, it actually came to pass that Vedavati was about to give birth. I mean, she has conceived. So that one big condition was over. His father said, all I want is a son. So he says, now you have a son. So he said, now let me go. And his father would say, no, please. I want both of you. So that one day, this debate between father and son became so acute that in a fit of emotional, sort of intense emotional activity, his father fell at his feet and said, please don't go, please don't take sannyas. And Madhvacharya said, look, it is unheard that a father will touch his son's feet. It's not allowed. According to etiquette, it should never happen, except in one situation only. If the father accepts that the son is a sannyasi, then to respect the ashram, he can do it. And there is no sin on part of the son. So now that you have done this, you are yourself proclaiming that I am a sannyasi now, I can't stay here. So his father, of course, Madhvacharya would show his debating skills with so many others. But his father was, finally his father relented and they said, both parents said, one last request, at least stay in the vicinity so that we can visit you. And he agreed to that. So in the ashram of Achyuta Preksha was a Vaishnava sannyasi. At that time, we have to understand the whole cultural environment. Ramanujacharya had finished his preaching, he has already disappeared, and there is a Vedic note somewhere that after the passage of every acharya, chaos comes, some kind of disorder. The acharya comes in an environment of disorder, and by just like if you have iron filings and they are going in different direction, you bring a powerful magnet and you will find that they all form a formation sort of thing. You take it away and there is the original chaos again comes. So it's not like people might say, what happened, this big acharya came and look what happened now. Chaos is the specialty of this material world. We have to respect and admire the kind of order which resulted because of the presence of that particular acharya. And those disciples, followers, devotees, personalities who strictly follow to the teachings, they will even see that order amidst chaos. But chaos will result. It's a fact. So Ramanujacharya's activities were also a bit subdued. Although the kind of Vaishnavism which he wanted to establish, especially eternal servitude towards the Supreme Lord, that Dasya Bhav, actually, at least people had understood that what Shankaracharya has said is not all in all. Vedanta doesn't mean Shankaracharya's Vedanta only. We have Ramanujacharya too. But still Mayavad was very strong. More than that, the devotees were disunited. So Achyuta Preksha, although being a sannyasi of the Vaishnav school, Vaishnav Sampradaya, there was still not much preaching going on. So Madhvacharya, when he took sannyas, he was given the name Purna Pragya Tirtha. And as he began to debate and talk and discuss with his other colleagues, it became known that he is no ordinary person. He is no ordinary person who has just taken sannyas here and has become the head. In fact, much later, his guru took sannyas from him again. His guru said, the diksha I took has its own limitations. You please benedict me. And a very rare occurrence took place where sannyas shishya initiated his own sannyas guru later. And then, as was his main work of his life, his mission, he moved out. He took some disciples and they started their journey north. His first desire was to go to Badrikashram. On the way to Badrikashram, again, his whole life is filled with so many pastimes, especially of strength. He was traveling with a disciple called Satya Tirtha. One day in a dense jungle, a Bengal tiger attacked Satya Tirtha. Now normally, the disciple feels that I depend on my guru for all protection. But here actually it came to pass that with a single blow, Madhvacharya killed that tiger. So these kind of things, superhuman feats would be always performed, and his disciples would be, they were amazed to see his physical strength. One wrestler, very proud fellow, called Kadanjari, he challenged him. "Well, I have heard about your prowess. I also know that you like wrestling. So why don't you challenge me?" Time was short. Madhvacharya has to go somewhere. And he didn't want to spend uselessly time arguing with these people. So he said, "Forget about a public event where you and me wrestle. Right now what I'm doing is, I'm putting my foot down here. You lift my toe. Just try that. If that's possible, then we'll talk of wrestling later." So he got so insulted. He was a very powerful person. And here is someone telling him that what to speak of wrestling, you just lift my toe. He tried. He was sweating profusely. And then he accepted defeat. As much as he was with physical strength, Madhvacharya was also equally at ease with debating skills. But first we'll talk about his Badrikashram Yatra. On the way, there are 2-3 instances where one king was digging a canal. And Madhvacharya himself volunteered to do that menial job there. He himself was digging it for the king. In a place called Ganga Pradesh, the Hindus on one side and Muslims on the other were quarreling so much that the result was nobody would be able to cross the river. If someone would come from that side, these people would fight, throw arrows or whatever, stones. So Madhvacharya, he volunteered, he swam across. The Muslim king on the other side caught him and he said, "How dare you do it? Nobody can do this when I am the king here." In chaste Persian language, Madhvacharya started talking with him. Normally when you hear someone talking your own language, you say, "Hey, is someone I can relate to." So the king discussed with him. Madhvacharya completely mesmerized him with his knowledge. And of course, the king said, "Anytime you want, sir, this passage is for you. No problem." And in this way, this small party reached Badrikashram. Sometimes we say that we have our connection with Lord Krishna. This parampara comes from Lord Krishna. So we have Krishna, then Brahma, then Narada, and then Vyasa. Then who's in between? There could be so many, and there are so many. But it is Madhvacharya who is our connection with the Brahma Sampradaya. That's why we also call it Brahma Madhva. And because of Lord Chaitanya's connection with Madhavendrapuri, Ishwarpuri in Bengal, it's Brahma Madhva Gaudiya. Actually, it's simply the Brahma Sampradaya. But there is Madhvacharya, his connection with Vyasadev. So, Vyasadev himself met Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya discussed his Bhagavad Gita commentary, that idea with him. And Vyasadev approved it. He approved the conclusions. It is described by some, in some story about Madhvacharya's life, that Madhvacharya was alone when Vyasadev was discussing with him. But before that, some of the disciples were saying that, "Please, let us also be there. We also want to come." So when Madhvacharya saw that some disciples were still coming as Vayu, he just let a breath, and that breath carried him there all the way down to the foothills of the Himalayas. So his disciples came to know that we can't defeat Guru Maharaj. So they waited till he came. As he came down, he dictated the Gita commentary, which this disciple Satyatirtha wrote down. He wrote many books. Wrote in the sense, he would dictate, disciples would write them down. There is Dasha Prakarana, 10 essays. And the Taittiriya Upanishad was one of his favorite Upanishads. And in fact, when he would sit, his posture is always that famous erect back and two fingers always. If Shankaracharya's understanding of what the world is or what spirituality is everything is one or Brahma Satya, only that Brahman particle is Satya, truth, everything else is Maya. Madhvacharya took just the opposite, antipodal position, diametrically opposite. Two, never alone, the jiva is never alone. It is always, eternal truth is that the jiva who is a servant and there is Ishvara who is a master. In Shankaracharya's understanding, there is no scope for servant and master relationship. The servant begins his career as a servant and wants to end it up as a master. So there is no way, no third way except by treachery. If there is scope for only one master, one boss, and there are two people, how can you solve the situation? One just kills the other. So, in Mayavad, there is no scope for these two entities to exist peacefully. While Vaishnavism says, why two? 2 billion can exist, coexist peacefully if they all agree that we are servants of this one. So it appears that Madhvacharya's opinions are so much against Shankaracharya's philosophy. Actually, it is said that the Madhva Sampradaya, they don't accept that it is Shankaracharya who spoke that philosophy. They are so much against, they say there is a demon in the body of Shankaracharya. It is not, Lord Shiva cannot speak like this. He cannot speak anything against the worship of Govinda. It is this demon who spoke. And therefore, that's what we are against. Sometimes devotees ask that, you know, in Prabhupada's books, why are you so much against Mayavad? In fact, when the disciples, very early, they heard Prabhupada speaking against Mayavad, some of them thought that this particular party must have given trouble to Prabhupada in India. But in India, Prabhupada had no disciples. But in India, Prabhupada had no disciples. So where could one vent his frustration or anger? Normally, you do it in front of your own people. So now that Prabhupada has a following, Prabhupada has some kind of disciple base, so he's telling them that his Mayavad is bad, his Mayavad is like this, his Mayavad is like that. In the West, there is no Mayavad. Well, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, in one of his seminars which he gives on combating Mayavad, he says, later we came to know that Nirvisheshvad and Mayavad are diseases. Is there something like American cold or German fever? Fever is fever and cold is cold. So similarly, Mayavad or Nirishwarvad, Nirvisheshvad is a disease of the soul. The soul becomes afflicted with this desire to become one, or to think that Krishna is without any form, ultimate, in the ultimate sense. That's a disease. Whether it comes through this way or that way, or takes this form or that form, that's immaterial. So Shripad Madhvacharya's contribution is this firm understanding that Mayavad can never be accepted as the ultimate conclusion. One day, people, Udupi is a beach, and they saw far away a ship, and it seemed that the ship was giving signals of it being in distress. Again, Madhvacharya being Vayu, he just guided that ship properly, saw to it that it is out of danger. The whole ship finally came near the shore. The captain could understand that he was almost sure that along with the cargo, the passengers, everything would have been finished, if not for this one particular personality guiding them. So the captain came ashore, thanked Madhvacharya and begged that, please accept something. I want to give you something. So finally Madhvacharya chose one big mound which looked like Gopi Chandan. He said, I can accept this as a gift. It was bound for Dwarka, along with many things, was this one huge block of Chandan, Gopi Chandan. As soon as they brought it ashore, it was very heavy. It almost required 30 people to lift that stone. But no sooner than they touched it, that whole thing broke and was revealed from that stone, that Gopi Chandan, a wonderful deity of Lord Krishna. He had a stick in one hand for controlling cows and lump of food in the other. Krishna's form as Gopal, who takes care of his cows. Spontaneously, Sripad Madhvacharya composed prayers glorifying. And that heavy deity whom 30 people could not lift, he lifted it, and singing those prayers, he just dancing and singing, he came all the way into Udupi town, and his followers decided to build a nice temple. Sripad Madhvacharya left the legacy of 8 principal monasteries called Ashtamatha. These 8 monasteries were arranged near the main Udupi temple, and they have something called a Paryaya system. Paryaya means one Mathadish, the chief sannyasi of that particular mutt, he assumes responsibilities as the chief of Udupi mutt. For 2 years, he takes a charge of the entire deity worship, the entire Archana Paddhati was supervised by him. At the end of the 2nd year, he hands over his responsibilities to his successor. And it seems that this system is doing quite well, since it's going on for the last 700 years. So that was one way of solving the problems. Otherwise, in most cases, if you make one person the successor, then sometimes some succession issues or other things could come up. But Madhvacharya's system is of 8 mathas, and they do in succession. It's called a paryay. In many places throughout Srila Prabhupada's Bhaktivedanta purports, he extensively draws on Madhvacharya's comments. And especially Thakur Bhaktivinod, when he wrote Dashamula, that entire Dashamula is 10 roots of this tree of Vedic understanding. These are taken straight from Sripad Madhvacharya's conclusions. So to understand what is the eternal position of the living entity vis-a-vis the super soul, or what is the idea of servitude, eternal servitude, some of the building blocks of our philosophical understanding, they are taken straight from Sripad Madhvacharya's conclusions. So Sripad Madhvacharya, he fulfilled one big task. As Bhakti Charu Maharaj, in one of his programs, he gives this comparison that Kali Yuga had begun, faith in Krishna, or even understanding that Krishna is the Lord, was already gone, lost. People were not reading Bhagavad Gita, or no conclusion was accepted. And to make matters worse, by following the Vedic system of sacrifices, people were killing animals. Nindasi yagya vidher ahaha shruti jatam. Shruti jatam. Saying that we are following the Vedas, people are killing animals. So just like someone is behaving in a wrong way, a lunatic, for example, far from understanding some questions or whatever, he is becoming violent. So they give him a strong dose of morphine. Just make him inert. And that's what Lord Buddha did. He just injected this strong sedative in society, and at least society became inert. Like if somebody has a weapon in hand and you give him a strong sedative, then you take out that weapon very gently so that he is not hurt and the weapon also is not hurt. Similarly, by taking away these Vedic sacrifices from people, Lord Buddha sanctified the sacrifice and also didn't allow society to perform more harm. But to keep somebody sedated is not the goal. You have to revive. So the first step in that revival was, which is necessary, that is Shankaracharya's understanding of Brahma. Lord Buddha had not given any idea of Brahma or whatever. At least people started opening their Vedas again. There was some idea of Vedic culture. The next step was Ramanacharya's Vishishtadvaita. And one big component of reviving theism is Madhvacharya's Dvaita-Dvaita-Vada. It is not Dvaita-Dvaita. There is no Advaita there. But it is Dvaita-Dvaita-Vada. And later we have Nimbarkacharya, Vishnu Swami. And then Lord Chaitanya, to wrap the whole thing up. Like you have many presents and you have a nice ribbon which goes through all of them and then that whole package. There is a conference, email conference with Gopi Parandan Prabhu, our reputed Sanskritist staying in Govardhan, and somebody asked him, we never find Achintya Bheda Bheda mentioned anywhere. So how can we say that or somebody said, no, to put it properly, there is Mayavad, Dvaitadvaitavad, Shuddhadvaitavad, Vishishtadvaitavad, Dvaitavad. Why it's not called Achintya Bheda Bheda Vad? In one sense, Lord Chaitanya did not give anything new. It's not new sometimes feels good. New means improvement. But in some context, new means, hey, is it spurious? Is it original? Is it something concocted? That danger also is there. So when we say, when Lord Chaitanya is saying, Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayor Das Das Anudas, is he proclaiming something new? He is not proclaiming something new. To be a servant of Krishna is what all the Vedas proclaim. But where do we see it? Where do we have the eyes to see it? So therefore, Lord Chaitanya, he took two things from Ramanuja Sampradaya, two things from Madhvacharya Sampradaya, to bring together. And that's why we, followers of Srila Prabhupada, we never say that our Sampradaya is just Brahma Sampradaya. We emphasize this connection with Madhvacharya and our Gaudiya lineage. So therefore it is Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Sampradaya. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Radha Gopinath ki, Shripad Madhvacharya Tirubhava Mahamahotsav ki. Yeah.